Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started. Hey, everyone. As always, stay tuned to the end of the interview where I'll give you some actionable insights that I learned from my guest. These insights are also in the show notes, and all of the show notes are over at theentrepreneurethos.com. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for the tweets. Thanks for the ratings and reviews. Just, you know, thanks for everything. Now, on to my guest for today, Lucinda Jackson, a scientist and former corporate executive who found her calling in writing, speaking, and consulting. Lucinda has written two books based on the lessons she's learned in life. Her first book, Just a Girl, Growing Up Female and Ambitious, chronicles her experiences as a female scientist and corporate executive, where she often found herself the only woman in the room. The book includes advice for women on building self-confidence and how to navigate male-dominated fields, but it also includes her thoughts on raising boys. She has three sons. Lucinda's second book, or more likely forthcoming book, is called Project Escape. Came out of her experiences with her husband building a business in winemaking, joining the Peace Corps in Micronesia, and becoming science teachers in Mexico. Lucinda decided then she wanted to have her own business, and her first book was the launching point for that. Lucinda provides a lot of insight into the various roads she's traveled, including the importance of figuring out your core values. Now, whenever she's presented with an opportunity, she asks, "Does this meet my core values?" Not one for missing any opportunity to learn, she also credits her success to the skills and discipline she developed while working in corporations. Now, let's get better together. Lucinda Jackson, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Jari. Great to be here.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show. We met through Brooke Warner and the She Writes Press group, which is the absolute most fantastic group of people I've ever presented to. And I'm so happy to be part of her other thing, which is Spark Press. She's going to help me publish my memoir, and I'm just over the moon because it's just such a great group of people. Love Brooke. Like, I can't say enough great things about Brooke. And, you know, you're an author, a business executive, a scientist. You've written a book called Just a Girl, Growing Up Female Ambitious. You got another book coming out. You've just got all this great stuff going on. You quit corporate, started your own business like 4 or 5 years ago. So you're like, you're pretty much the authorpreneur, entrepreneur, the whole package, right? So before we dive into all that, which I'm really curious to hear about, like I always like to say, why don't you tell us how you got to do what you're doing today?
Well, I was trained as a scientist, and then I got involved in corporate world for 4 decades. I was with a bunch of different Fortune 500 companies, and I was in chemicals and oil and gas, so a very industrial, male-oriented business. And I always felt a little different when I was there. I was, in most all of my jobs, I was the first female ever to have that job. And I was often the only female in the room of 500 guys. I used to kind of think of myself as a poodle among brown dogs. I know you're an engineer, but there are a lot of engineers.
Oh, yeah. Well, when I was in engineering school, and this was in the 90s, early 90s, I mean, I don't know, 5-10% of our class was female. I mean, I was electrical engineering, so right. A little bit different. That was around the time that they started having computer science as just its own discipline. Because it used to be electrical engineering, computer science, and they switched off because the computer scientist guys couldn't handle the fields and waves. just kidding. But yeah, back then, and you know, it just wasn't something that women got into. But now,
guys have brown hair, like slicked down, and
yes,
and blue shirts, and
yeah,
with this frizzy blonde hair, and. I never fit in.
You definitely stood out in the crowd for sure.
My guy told me I had Democrat hair.
Oh, Democrat. Oh, burn. Wow. Dad.
I was still kind of working, but thinking about what I, like I said, I always felt different. I always had a lot of ideas. I like to be on the forefront of stuff. Like one example, I wanted the last company I worked for to be more sustainable. I'm an environmental scientist, and the CEO didn't want me to use the word sustainable. He disallowed me to use that word. And now this same company has a VP of sustainability. So I was like out there in the forefront, and always like kind of getting shut down, and they're saying, no, we don't need to be sustainable, or no, we don't need a wind farm. And these are the kind of things I was pushing, you know, renewables and stuff like that. And so I was always felt a little out of it. Didn't totally fit in. And during this time, my husband and I decided to start a winery. So we ran this winery, and we learned a ton from that about being entrepreneurs. We completely got caught up in the allure of the business. And it just seemed so romantic, you know, to have a winery, and we pictured sipping and friends, and we started the business and found out that it's really 99% marketing. And my husband's a winemaker, so we were in there for the wine and the product, and it's really a hospitality services business.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we did not fit, because he's a scientist too, and we were really into the grapes and the wine. And didn't realize that's what it was all about. So learned a ton from that failure, big failure, ended up in a lawsuit. We also joined it with friends who are no longer our friends. Classic, right?
That's so sad.
Why did we do that?
It's hard, because I think what someone said, yeah, you want to make $1 million in a wine business, start off with 10 million.
Yeah. No, we knew that.
Well, but you know, what's interesting is that you know, I mean, I see your point. Like it's interesting. So this is the whole passion versus, you know, oh, I'm passionate about this, but should it really be a business? And, you know, you kind of learn that the hard way, but this is a lot of times you hear this so constantly. So really wonderful that you've sort of shared that, because sometimes it's not all sunny in startup land, you know?
And he and I are not the type to host a wedding or a big party. I mean, then that's what you do in the wine business. So
we didn't
fit in that either. And then I decided I really wanted to leave the corporate world, and just, you know, that was at least got my toe in. I really liked that freedom, as you said. I decided, though, I wasn't quite ready for a big business again because of the failure with the winery, and I decided we should join the Peace Corps. So we were 66 years old.
Wow.
And we joined the Peace Corps, and we went to the island nation of Palau. Mm-hmm. And it turned out to be a huge bust. And the Peace Corps was in the process of shutting down the Peace Corps after 60 years in the Western Pacific Ocean into Micronesia. And we were the last class, and they were kind of let us come, even, and we didn't know all this until we got there, and it was completely disorganized and in disarray, and we had no money. They really underestimated how much money to give us, and we were poor, poor, poor. And, you know, I had experience, like, it was just like 2 weeks after I left the corporate world, when I had been like driven in a limo to the airport, dropped off at first class, you know, that faux business corporate rich thing you had to get into.
Yeah, it's addictive.
Or, I'm not rich, but, you know, they were the corporations.
Yeah.
And then the next, you know, 2 weeks later, you can't drive when you're in the Peace Corps. And so I'm, you know, like having to hike to work in 100% humidity and jumping off the road because nobody in Palau walks. It's one of those cultures where you only poor people walk, or like the Bangladeshi that come there to do the agricultural work. And I'm jumping off the side of the road into a ditch, sewer ditch with mud squishing up through my flip flops. And that was my next phase. But I learned a ton of humility. As you can imagine, I got over any ego thing I had about corporate life. And it was actually super interesting. And my second book, the one that's this Project Escape, Lessons for an Unscripted Life, the one that is coming out in April, it's about that transition from,
oh, wow,
ego, identity, money, marriage, of a full-time career to full-time, like, free time.
Yeah.
All the impacts that has on people's relationships and their, how they feel about themselves and their purpose. And, you know, I went through all that stuff of like, what's my purpose? What, who am I? You know, who was, I used to be somebody. Now I'm nobody. And learned a lot from that journey. And when that failed, then we decided to go to Mexico.
It's the, my jiu-jitsu instructor calls, there's the winner in the learner, not the failure. It's the learner. So shout out to Tim. Yeah, it's like learning a lot today.
We went to Mexico and we decided to teach science in schools in Mexico, like elementary to high school level. Because he's a chemist and I'm a biologist. And we speak rudimentary Spanish, but they let us in their schools. They were happy to have some people that could teach science. They don't have any science teachers in these little towns, you know.
Right, right.
And we loved it. I mean, we set our own schedule. We, you know, felt respected. We got a lot of attention. I mean, it was great for our egos. The kids were so rewarding. And that's when I started feeling that real feel of like, I want my own business. I want to run my own thing. And so I wrote my first book while I was in Mexico, which is called Just a Girl Growing Up Female Ambitious. And it's about the whole corporate life of sexism and harassment that I experienced from the 1950s up till the present day. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, a girl wanting to be a scientist was not a cool thing back then. I mean, you're told you can't be a girl.
Right. Right.
So it's about that. And it, that got me saying, I'm going to start this as a business. I'm going to treat this as a business. So I started my own business and I call it LJ Ventures so that I could do anything I wanted. And now it involves speaking, which I love to do. Consulting. I still do, science consulting, environmental consulting, which is very satisfying for me. And then my books. So it's a combination of writing, still doing some science, speaking and consulting. And who knows what I'm going to add next, but I feel like I've found my place. I feel like I've blossomed.
Yeah. Well, what does that feel like?
Blossoming.
No. I mean, what does that feel like? Because, you know, I talk with a lot of young entrepreneurs, and usually in the tech space, you know, and usually the motivation is I want to go build a unicorn. I want to get rich or whatever. And, you know, I was telling them like, this is not a job you get rich at. Full stop. Very rare, very rare. You do it because it's an independent life that completes you. And I'm curious what it feels like now. I mean, your career, I mean, talk about a wonderful like backdrop for, you know, I have now chosen entrepreneurship to finally feel comfortable, whatever the word you, I would, what are those feelings like?
It completes me.
Wow. Wow.
That's great. It does. Well, you know, what I finally did was I took a project management process that I used a lot to, developing major capital projects in the oil and gas industry.
Okay.
Use that process on myself to figure out myself and what I needed. And what they do in the process, phase one is where you identify needs. So I identified, and I know you talk about this in one of your books, my core values.
Yes.
Core value. I really got clear on my core values and I dug and dug, and it's painful. You know, you kind of have to.
It is.
Shit it about is. Yourself.
Yeah. Sometimes you're not the greatest person in the world, even to yourself.
Yeah. And they've morphed. And now I have five of them.
Oh, okay.
And I use those as criteria. So if I'm going to take something on, I look back into my core values and say, does this meet like the majority of my core values? And if it doesn't, it's like red flag, red flag. Because like the Peace Corps, I started this in Peace Corps and none of my core values were being met with that Peace Corps assignment.
Oh, interesting.
And so.
Wow. Okay.
Now, I guess what I'm, to get back to your question, how's it feel? I feel like I'm meeting my core values, but I'm doing it with intention. I even have a scorecard, you know, to say like, I use a simple, I don't try to develop metrics like I did in the corporate world. I just do like a red, green, yellow, like one of them mine is authentic self. Mm-hmm. Like I wasn't really ever able to be my authentic self in the corporate world. And there's a lot of fakery that goes on.
Oh yeah.
Now right. I get to be myself, but I watch things, and if I'm getting into something where I'm starting to feel like it's not me, or like I can't really, I have to act a little differently, or somebody's too aggressive and I have to get back into that corporate like sparring, then I go and I give it a yellow, you know, like watch this, and then it turns into a red. I'm going like, no, I'm gonna, and I have quit things now that I've got myself into based on I'm not meeting my core criteria. So
interesting. Do you mind sharing your core values? I'd love to hear them.
Oh yeah. The first one is noble purpose. it sounds corny, but I've always been idealistic. And I guess that's why I got into environmental stuff and into helping women and minorities in the workplace. That's a lot of what I do now. And so it has to have something that makes me feel like I'm helping the world. And in a bigger sense too, it can't just be like one little thing. Like I picked up some litter at a park. I'd rather do something where I help the park develop a litter pickup program.
So, right. The more the systematic approach. Yeah.
Leverage.
Yeah. Love that. Yeah.
And the second one is authentic self, which I mentioned. And then the third one is adventure and freedom. Super important to me. I love to learn, I want to do new things. If I find myself doing the same old thing, like I could do this in my sleep, and I'm going, I'm not learning anything new, and I shouldn't continue. Like going to meetings, if it involves going to meetings, I can't do it. I can't. I went to too many meetings.
High five. You were like,
you don't like meetings either.
My motto is the best meeting's the one that got canceled.
So good.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. Like, look, I
have to have them. Yeah.
Have to have them. But if you're thinking this meeting could have been an email, you're having too many meetings.
Exactly. Exactly. And you go off topic and there's no agenda and on. I just go nuts. Anyway, so it's that one. And then the fourth one is valued. That was one took me a while to get to, but I admitted that I really need to feel valued. And if I'm not being treated right, or don't feel respected, this is not good. Not good for me. And then the last one, which I added, the last is romance. And for me, the romance means with my husband, who I adore. And when we had three kids and both working corporate jobs with big commutes, you know, we lived like parallel lives. And this is an opportunity for us to spend really great. We've like revived our love life. And it's just, and I don't want to mess that up. So anything I choose to do, I want it to involve him, give us time to have adventures and closeness together. And that real, you know, not just like dinner once every 6 months. I mean, some sustainable, wonderful time together. And that's super important to me. That's it.
Wow.
Questions, comments?
Well, no, I'm blown away, to be honest. I mean, my fiance now, Minerva, she has a similar kind of framework that she does, where she's got, she has like categories of her life, and she's really like very, very intentional about like, where does this match my values? And it's really interesting because core values are one of those things for people and for your company and what you want to do that are so important as sort of a litmus test for, is this, should I spend my valuable time on this, which is the way I always think about it. And I love the fact that this is, you know, noble purpose, authentic self, adventure, freedom, being valued. And then the romance, the personal side, the life partner, are we growing? Like it's beautiful. And, you know, as young people, sometimes like younger people, you know, they're more focused on those external things, right? Like, oh, I don't know what I don't know. Right. I mean, and they don't. Like when I was young, same with you, I was ambitious, had all of these traits. I thought that success was a certain way. And then you live a little, you have some tragedy, you have some struggle, you go through a catastrophic trauma, like, you know, my wife died. You start to realize that, boy, I had it all mixed up. And it's just beautiful that, like, you know, because we need to talk more about this. And I think the reason why we need to talk more about it is not only for your own personal core values, but also your experience in the corporate world, what you wrote about in your book, Just a Girl, about boys and men liberation and really trying to change the narrative of that, because this is something I'm really interested in. Because when I went through the grief and sorrow and trauma of losing my partner, as a man, I felt alone, and there was some weird stuff. I'm like, this is treated differently, right?
You're a woman.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, right. And so, but this is the thing I really love about, like, as a society, like if we all had, and these are these core values, right? A core value is similar to this. We really do need to change the narrative on a lot of different things. And I love that you sort of, reinvention is sort of this like cliche word, but, you know, you finally found something that completes you after learning a lot of things and willing to share it. How would others like go through the, I mean, I guess the, what I'm trying to say is, how can the young folk short circuit the pain and suffering, get to these core values? I mean, you know, I got some gray in the beard. I've been around a while. I mean, you know, this is crazy Uncle Jari and, you know, Aunt Lucinda telling you some, like, speaking some truth here, guys. Like, we're here to help. How do we do this? How do we, like, have those conversations that are so powerful, yet in a way that people, like, listen? Because I feel sometimes we talk over each other. We kind of yell at each other. Everyone thinks they know everything, which they don't. I mean, I know I don't know everything. That's, like, fundamental. So what do you think?
Well, what I do like to tell young people is that, well, you can't avoid any of the pain and sorrow, and don't, because it's damn interesting. And the more you can embrace it, and so something horrible happens, you know, and you go, okay, wow, you know, this is life. I mean, I am living life. And you learn a ton.
You do.
It took me a long time to get there, but when bad things happen to me, I'm still like, okay, all right, I can do this. You know, this is, I'm going to learn. This is interesting. So, yeah, you don't, you can't run away from it. So embrace it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm glad you brought that up because
it's hard.
It's hard. Yeah. I remember someone asking me, or there was this one, someone said, what good came out of Jane dying? Right.
Right.
And that sounds like the dumbest question ever. Right. Cause you know, when you're in the acute phases of grief and sorrow, it is the dumb, you like, really, you want to throw down, like, you know, as a, someone that's suffering, all you want to do is lash out, like, no. Right.
Yes.
But as time goes on and you sort of have that perspective, to your point, which is like, okay, I have this setback that's made, what can I learn from it? I like the part that like you find it interesting, which is an interesting way to bring about it. But I knew that I had kind of processed everything when I could answer that question. Hmm. Not that it's ever going to go away, but I can move through it in a way where I can live my values, which, you know, are, you know, these are pretty good.
What are your core values?
Well, I mean, I would say, you know, noble purpose. Yeah, that's very much a good one. I'm really high on being valued and trusted. Like, I have a hard time when people are like, challenge my integrity. Like, are you kidding me? Really? Yeah. Huh?
Right.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Same thing, right? So you're like, what part of me says that I'm some weird person that's going to screw you? I'm not. Like, but I had to, yeah. A lot of therapy went in working on that, which I still have to work on, right? Freedom is important. Adventure and learning. Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah. Romance. I'd love to have more romance and a little bit more, you know, connection that way. And then the authentic self one's a very interesting one because I think through the noble purpose in being valued, I think that shows up, and that valued part is the authentic self kind of forcing itself out. But the other thought part about being valued is like, you know what? Some people you just can't reach.
No.
Eh. Right. And so it's just, again, this is so fascinating because I think as entrepreneurs, you know, I mean, as you're a scientist, I'm an engineer by training. We really do have to think of these things because we as entrepreneurs are actually given a pretty substantial role in society. Like, mm-hmm. They give us a lot of slack to like build stuff and fail. And we're like, yeah, go for it. Whatever, you know, we actually have a moral obligation to treat that with respect. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think this gets back to like what you did in the book, you know, You're Just a Girl book, and talking about these sexual harassment specifically and other, you know, things that are not building an inclusive and resilient world. And I would love to talk a little bit more about that and how that sort of shapes how you're applying that to entrepreneurship. Because again, one of the things that I'm really passionate about, I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to do this because it's a, you know, it's a bold thing, but I feel I have to help build better men.
Well, thank boys. You for doing that.
Well, I mean, and the reason is because I think a lot of the suffering in the world and a lot of the challenges and struggles is because I agree with you. I don't think men and boys are liberated to be who they are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think just like there's toxic masculinity, as an example, there has to be a corollary. There has to be the opposite of that.
Yes.
What is that? Right. Mm-hmm. So I know we're probably getting a little off track with the entrepreneur stuff, but like, I think this is important because the majority of entrepreneurs are men.
Men, yeah.
Unfortunately, 80%, more than 80% of all the funding goes to men. Women minority entrepreneurs are even, you know, they're the 1% of the 1%. I say that you're the, like the golden unicorns. Cause like, wow, there's one of you. Oh my gosh. You know? So how do we use this? What you've learned, what you've written about? I mean, you have three boys, you know, you've raised men, they're men now. How do we take that and put this, you know, build this more ethical, inclusive world? And I think it's through entrepreneurship, but like, what are your thoughts? Like, how do we weave that in?
Well, I think, like I have a lot of tips in my Just a Girl book and for women. And I think it really applies to women entrepreneurs because I had like no confidence. And girls today, fortunately, have a lot more confidence than I did. But I grew up in a world that was no to women. You're not worth it. And you're, what are you thinking? And, you know, a lot of put downs. And so to be a woman entrepreneur, as you said, there's not too many of them. So you really need, I would recommend following some of the tips in my book, which is like how to get the floor, how to say what you have to say, how not to be interrupted, how to, you know, present your ideas, how to show up, how to get a seat at the table, but still be a nice person, you know, because I hate it in with women turning into men. And every time I turn on the TV and there's like another woman warrior with an AK-47, I just go, what the heck is this? It's like the opposite of what I want. I want to see the men holding babies. And so that's my platform. And I think, especially for women entrepreneurs, it's super important to learn, you know, how to get your confidence. And I have a lot of tips because I went through that for years and years of from somebody with no confidence to somebody who now has a reasonable amount. I mean, I still get my bouts of
self-doubt. Oh yeah.
Cry, you know,
as writers, the dark night of the soul.
So I think that's, you know, super important. And, and like you said, I did devote a whole chapter in my book to the raising liberated boys, and talking about BAML, the Boys and Men Liberation Movement, my own acronym. But I did raise three wonderful men that are loving and successful, and, you know, they're not, wimpy or anything. I mean, they're kind, wonderful, powerful men, and I'm so proud of them. And I think it, you know, I'd love to teach more people how to do that, because there's definitely ways to do it. It's not just like, it wasn't a fluke, right? I was conscious about it.
Yeah. And, you know, what's interesting is that history, it has never always been sort of this way with, you know, we're in a modern kind of era of a different kind of ethos when it comes to male masculinity. I mean, you know, I always like to harken back to sort of the intellectual, the poet warrior type ethos, where, you know, there is obviously, it's kind of outdated in a sense that, you know, there was definitely like different roles, but, and this way back, even the Shogun era and the samurai and all that. I mean, again, take out the kind of the misogyny aside, right? Because that needs to change. But the whole point of the whole person, and the whole, like, yes, I can do this martial art, I can show violence, but I can also control my violence. I can do poetry. You know, I can be this intellectual that realizes that strength is in knowledge and compassion and all these sort of things. Again, modernize. Like, of course, we don't want to go to the Shogun era, but there's a lot. It's really interesting to learn about these sort of things because, you know, even in like Victorian Europe, you know, there's fundamental societal things, but men had a little, like they could, I mean, when you looked at how they dressed up, it was different. I mean, it was different. And again, I'm butchering it. And of course, not taking all of that. Of course, there's clearly, but there's sort of models to do that. And I love the fact that it's like a powerful, compassionate man, you know.
I'm looking for a leader for BAML. So maybe you could do it, or you're it.
I'm very honored that you would even think of me, because that's a very important thing. You know, I appreciate that. And of course, we can have further discussions on that outside the book.
Another thing I would just say is that this thing about finding your core values, I do cover that in my second book, The Project Escape, which is the title there is about escaping from the corporate structure. Mm-hmm. And going to a more unscripted life and escaping also from the identity that I associated with.
Yeah.
In a really tight, structured, competitive, you know, industry for so many years. So in that book, I do give people tips about how to find your core values and, you know, how to define them. Because it's hard. People say things like, well, travel's my core value. And I go, well, no, that's not. And they go, oh, yeah, it is. I said, no, because a core value has it's sustainable and it has a lot of possibilities of being satisfied. So if you pick travel as a core value, COVID hits, you can't travel. Well, you're toast because that's, you say that's a core value and you can't do it.
Well, I mean, that's, that seems like a tactic for the up the strategic core value of freedom and adventure, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
core values, then you can, if it's like learning is what you love about travel, then you take learning and then you look at all the alternatives of how to satisfy that. And
right.
Then palette is wide. Travel may be one, but you can't travel right now. So you learn from maybe reading, you learn from,
right,
you know, some, a new, making a new friend. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to do it. And so people get boxed in with that core value thing. And it's been very interesting talking to people about it and trying to get them to go to it.
Well, I mean, I think it's the same thing with wants and needs, right? You know, as authors, you know, all of our protagonists have got wants external and needs internal. And usually people are very good at saying what their wants are, but they're really poor at understanding their core internal need. And I think this is where your core values come in, right? Like, oh, I love to travel. Well, what's your real core value of that is adventure and learning or whatever it is. Yeah. You got to ask like the question, like, you know, you were in engineering. Yes. You got to ask you got to ask the five whys to get down to the real core, right? Like, and those of you that are really engineering nerdy, you will appreciate that, you know? I mean, it's just a fascinating thing because I agree with your premise, right? It's, you know, I was talking with Stephanie Slocum. I interviewed her over at Engineers Rising, and she's all about empowering women in engineering, right? I mean, the same exact story that you've talked about and all of it. I mean, my guess is like the exact same, like challenges, struggles, massage, like the whole thing, right? And was interesting.
Her name. I want to talk to her.
Oh yeah, Steph. I'll introduce you because she's awesome. Just so wonderful. And she wrote a book and the whole thing. You know, really trying to, what she's trying to do is empower women to be more in, you know, like, hey, if you want to be in STEM and you want to be an engineer, like this is how you can navigate that and confidence. Like, because again, her take on it was exactly the same. If you are the only one in a room, it's hard to speak up. And if you're in an environment where it's like competitive and engineering is generally, they're not very sociable. I mean, broadly, I'm sorry if I offend anyone, but it's true. You self-select into that for a reason. You're not going into marketing. You went to engineering for a reason, right? You're an introvert or whatever, right? Or highly functional introvert like I am. But like you self-selected into it because it's safe and it's data, it's physics, blah, blah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. And the softer side of it, which what's interesting about engineering management is typically they will take the, successful engineer and try to make him a manager. And it's a disaster. I mean, same thing with scientists, right? It's like, it is not the same skill set.
This None is of them good... even want to be managers. They never fill the jobs. Like, no, I don't want to be a manager.
No. The same thing for like, as entrepreneurs, right? Technical founder gets it to a certain point and it's like, well, there's a definite skill set. And it does have to do with being in touch with the emotional side and knowing that humans are messy. We're emotional. We're irrational. It ain't like an algorithm, right? And her premise is, look, I've done this. I can teach you how to do it. So, you know, she's got a bunch of, really, honestly, she's just such a wonderful interview.
You know, one other point I wanted to make was a pitch for it was for older people. You talked about what's the advice for younger people, but for older people, I mean, people always think like, well, am I too old to do this? Mm-hmm. But I like to turn that around and kind of bust stereotypes and say, am I too young to do this? Anybody at any age, you say, am I too young? Which would mean like, I don't really know enough about business yet. I don't really know myself. I can't figure out my core value. Maybe I'm too young to start this. So are you too young? And
I like that.
I have found something really satisfying about having my own business at this age, which is people assume that I'm doing nothing. And they'll see me and say, oh, you're retired. You know, what are you doing? Are you traveling, playing golf? And I say, no, I have my own business. And I can't tell you how good that makes me feel. Because I've blown their stereotype. And then they go, oh, and then there's a new conversation, you know, rather than talking about a cruise or something. At least we're talking about something interesting to me.
Well, yeah, I mean.
So I just want to encourage at any age. Am I too young?
I love that. No, I mean, you know, the average age of like a founder of a startup, venture-backed startup, is like 40. Right. Because you kind of, depending on if you're venture back, obviously you got to have some experience to know what you're doing. But I like that. I like that. Are you young? Are you too young? And too young, quote unquote, may not be years young, but young in the process.
And I have found that, you know, my experience in business and having hundreds of employees and, you know, all of the stuff I did, is so great for being an entrepreneur. I mean, I know if I had to, I could run a meeting, but I don't like to. But no, I know how to set metrics. I know how to set goals. I know how to, you know, monitor for success. I know how to have a vision and all these things that, you know, I learned on somebody else's dime and their time. I mean, and I got paid for it. So, you know, there's ways to get, that's why I liked your business book. Jari, because you said you don't have to go to business school, but you need to have those business skills. And I got them in the corporate world, and I thank them for that.
Yeah, that's what I always tell authors.
You know, I can tell people who don't have any business skills. I can see them, even if they're entrepreneurs, I can see them.
Oh, yeah. It's
budgeting. I mean, just basic stuff.
Well, yeah, basics. Like this is the thing. Like that's why, you know, the book that she's referring to is called Business Basics for Entrepreneurs. Yeah. You kind of got to know the language of it or you're going to get into trouble really quick. Right. And I always say when, you know, people that I know that have been entrepreneurs after they've left corporate, I'm going to go, well, you know, the corporate folks, they know the right way to do it. So learn the right way. So then you can figure out, oh, I don't want to do it that way. Or I'm going to cut this corner, like the meeting thing. Yeah, I'm going to do it my own way. But you know, like you said, like, which is great. Like I know how to budget. I know how to set goals. Super important. Basic stuff. Doesn't take much to learn. Not that hard, honestly. It's pretty intuitive, but it's a discipline. And it, you know, it makes or breaks your company. It's like the operating system of entrepreneurship has to be foundational business skills, not just like creation. I mean, which is fine. Like I always say, we're the creatives of the business world. But I mean, like with authors, entrepreneurs, it's the same thing. You got to know a little bit. You may hate it and you'd be like, Jari, I do not want to be a business person. It's like a bad word. It's like being a salesperson. It's the S word. Ugh. Sorry. I knew a little bit. You got to know what you got to know, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you say the word discipline. People ask me about being an author, like what's the key to being an author and getting a book published? I always say discipline. And I learned it in the corporate world. I had a schedule, you know, I had deadlines to meet. I knew how to put the nose to the grindstone. I learned that from, you know, if you don't meet your metrics, you don't get your bonus. And I learned a lot of stuff. So
yeah,
and that people don't like to hear that because it's supposed to be hard.
Well, they like what's your passion and all that, and that's, you need that, but the passion doesn't sustain the dark night of the soul. It's the discipline. It's the, actually, I always say it's the blue collar work to get up at 5:30 in the morning and actually write for half an hour.
Yeah.
Or well, I do sometimes. Well, I'm an early bird. I love getting up. Like I love to attack the day, you know, like, but.
So I get up at 10 and then I stay up till 1.
Well, you're hours. Different. You
well,
know,
it's my new life, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean, like,
I can do whatever I want.
Well, that's true. And what's interesting is, you know, in our tribe as a tribe, like you need guys like me, gals like you and others to be like, okay, you take the early shift, you take the late shift. But make sure no one's going to kill us. Like, yeah. You know, it's the beauty of it, you know, it's really beauty. Well, yeah, it's just been such a great conversation, Lucinda. I just so appreciate you and love what you're trying to do. Love the energy of like the core value, just inspirational. So thank you so much for being on the show. I'm so glad. Again, every time I meet someone from Brooks tribe, whatever we want to call it, I'm just always blown away. So
likewise, really enjoyed this conversation. And I want you to be the head of BAML.
Well, we'll work on that. We'll figure out how we can help each other for sure. Thanks again.
Thank you so much, Lucinda, for being on the show. I really enjoyed our conversation. What a great life you've had to date, and only going to get better, it seems. So now, as promised, here are the actionable insights that I learned from my interview with Lucinda. Lucinda says one of the key moves she made when becoming an entrepreneur was figuring out her core values, whether it's for yourself or your company, or even better, both. These values will provide a compass to keep you on track and help get you where you want to go. In fact, I mean, we actually discussed this a lot, which I thought was just so fantastic. So definitely ask yourself, what do you stand for? What are your core values? And how those core values intersect with what you're trying to build. I think that's really important. That comes down to what we always talk about with your why, that internal reason, you know? And I love the core value discussion, just so spot on. Treat everything, bad or good, as a learning experience. Lucinda credits her years in the corporate world as valuable for teaching her a process she now applies to her own businesses. When bad things happen, she tries to figure out what the lesson is. And this is hard. I try to do that a lot, but I think it's a really valuable insight because bad things are going to happen. Like, I mean, you cannot live in the bubble. Like, you just have to ask yourself, all right, this happened. What can I learn from this experience? How can I get better? How can I move on? How can I help my team? Really is very powerful to sort of have this sort of idea that you're always learning. So there you have it. The actionable insights that I learned from my awesome interview with Lucinda. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur, and frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at TheDailyMBA, and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.